Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC. Now imagine managing an elementary school of about 240 students, 55 staffers, and dealing with hundreds of involved parents and family members interested in their child's progress. Now imagine doing all of this blind. Former principal Bill Henderson used to do all of this and much more daily while he was the principal of the Patrick O'Hearn Elementary School in Boston. He credits his blindness with helping him become a better principal and integrating inclusive education into the school. Inclusive schools combine general education students, students with disabilities, and gifted students all in the same class. So joining us now is Bill Henderson. He has a new book called The Blind Advantage, How Going Blind Made Me a Stronger Principal and How Including Children with Disabilities Made Our School Better for Everyone. Officially, it's being released on October 17th. Principal Henderson, welcome to WNYC. Thank you so much for coming on with us. Hello from New York.
Good morning, Brian.
When did you find out that you were going blind? I guess it was probably a gradual process, and you were already a principal?
Well, no. When I was 12, I found out I had something called RP, retinitis pigmentosa, but I had been told that it wasn't going to be a problem until I was in my 60s. And when I was 24, after my first year of teaching in Boston, an eye doctor told me that he thought, after extensive testing, that my vision was going to get worse in the next 5 to 15 years. And then he told me to get out of education. About 7 years later, I noticed some changes was getting worse, and I went to get advice from a deputy superintendent, and that person told me that I qualified for disability retirement. But it was a gradual loss, and I lost my ability to read before I became a principal in my 30s.
And in the book, you say going blind had a positive impact and helped prepare you to be a more effective principal. Did you prepare in some way for the gradual loss of sight?
Well, initially, of course, I think I reacted with anger and depression, particularly with the advice from experts, but with
all the stages of grief.
Yeah, so but with have the realities of having three young children and just a lot of support from family, friends, and other colleagues, and then also learning blind skills. So I learned how to walk with a cane, to read Braille, to use some of the technologies. And I think I had a little more determination, a little more grit. So I think the first thing, it was not only that I'm going to make it as an educator, as a teacher, but then I met a group of parents in the 80s who were also hearing a similar message for their children with more significant disabilities, autism, cerebral palsy, Down syndrome, multiple disabilities, medical disorders. Their kids didn't have a chance to be included in Boston at that time, and they demanded of the city that there be this opportunity. And so they were being told that their kids couldn't do it. So I hooked up with those parents, and then that's how the school started. I was blind when I started, although my vision has continued to get worse, uh-huh. But I was certainly not reading print and not moving around without a cane when I was a principal.
So when you got that advice to get out of education, why didn't you?
Well, I contemplated, but imagine when you're 30, you're in good health, you have three young children, you're supposed to go on disability retirement? I mean, it's nuts. First of all, when the doctor told me that, I thought he was a total jerk, he didn't know what he was talking about, and my vision wasn't going to get worse. So I found out that, I started bumping into things more, I started having problems seeing small print, finding items that I dropped on the floor. So it was a gradual thing, but I admit that was one of my considerations and options in life, but it just made no sense. And I think also I'm fortunate that I had a career in the 70s when we had the other civil rights movements for integration of African Americans, women, and then again for people with disabilities. So it was right timing, a lot of supports. And I said, I can do this. I can be a good teacher. I can be a stronger teacher. And then, carrying that on to be a principal.
How do you think it made you a better principal?
Well, I already mentioned, certainly made me more determined, clearly gave me a lot more sensitivity to the diversity of needs in children. And so, but sensitivity, not just in being nice, but sensitive, but high expectations, you know. One of the things that changed was my vision, ironically, my vision of the world and of education, that there are many different ways of doing things. So I had to learn how to read and write differently without using my eyes. It was through my ears and fingers, with technology, with Braille. And there's so many children in school for whom one way of doing things, the standard way of doing things, either doesn't work for them or it doesn't fully engage them. So that learning, that vision, and then it forced me to be much more organized, which is an important characteristic for, I think, all of us in life, particularly in education. And finally, it taught me how to collaborate more, that, yes, I needed help with some things, but I also had expectations that I was going to be helpful. And that was collaborating with parents, with staff, with students, and with lots of outside supporters.
And how did you transform O'Hearn Elementary School?
Well, it was a slow process, and it was definitely a team effort. You know, we had to have staff who were a little bit more dedicated, a little bit more flexible and creative. They had to have their traditional skills in their specialty areas of general education, special education, occupational therapy, teaching Braille, paraprofessionals, nurses. But now they had to work as a team, because in every classroom of 23, 24 kids, there'd be 8 kids with disabilities, some with some very significant issues, some kids who a generation ago would not have been in school. And we did it working towards the standards. You know, I'm a believer in having high expectations and standards and having everybody work towards those standards. Most kids with disabilities, providing accommodations, reading and writing differently, bringing in the arts into our educational process, lots of technology. But also for students with cognitive delays and intellectual disabilities, having them participate in the same curriculum content and themes, but clearly modifying the material. And when we found that we modified the material for students who were delayed, we also were modifying material for students who were advanced. So really, it's meeting children where they were and taking them higher. And that philosophy, rather than thinking of this is third grade, everybody does the same thing the same way, but rather in our third grade, we have some students working well above grade level, on grade level, slightly below, and some students who are developmentally very, very low.
There are varying points of view on inclusive schools. Some people, depending on the disability, some people think that their kids might be more hampered than helped by having to keep up rather than being in kind of a safer, more cloistered environment. Some kids who are academically gifted, whatever that means, may feel that being even in a mainstream inclusive class holds their kids back. Is there some truth to each of those things? And if so, how do you fight those tendencies?
Well, my philosophy and inclusion, first of all, I want to say not every child we had made all the progress we had hoped, and that include kids with disabilities and without. And there were some of our students that went on to substantial separate or private placements, but the percentage was very low, around 1% or 2%. What I have a problem is when doctors and neurologists and educators, when a child is 3 or 4, make this decision, he or she can't learn with typical peers. How do you know unless you try, and unless you try with supports? And clearly, you know, we wanted a safe and positive learning environment for the kids with disabilities. We wanted that for the kids without disabilities. In fact, we found that the quality of interactions and student support, kindness, and compassion improved when we had kids with significant disabilities in our school. And ultimately, the proof is in the pudding. We had academic standards, and the scores overall of our students rose dramatically with inclusion. And before inclusion, our school was one of the lower performing schools in the city. And since we've included and through No Child Left Behind, usually our school is one of the top performing schools in the city and has become a very popular school. And there are other inclusive schools in Boston that are some of the most popular schools, and parents are having a tough time getting them in there. So I think it has more to do with the effectiveness of the school and not inclusion per se. And so often children with disabilities are blamed, are used as excuses and scapegoats for schools' failings. And I wanted to book to show that I felt the kids with disabilities helped us become even better.
Bill Henderson. His new book is called The Blind Advantage, How Going Blind Made Me a Stronger Principal, and How Including Children with Disabilities Made Our School Better for Everyone. An inspiring story. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC. And coming up next, have you been our Twitter hashtag scout today? We will take your calls with what you've been following in the Twitter sphere and why it's interesting. You can start calling right now, 212-433-WNYC, 212-433-9692. I've been following the what people are writing about the BlackBerry outage, which is spreading today, and we'll take it from there. Have you done this? What have you found that's interesting, informative, funny, educational, useless, but you're going to call with it anyway? 212-433-WNYC, 433-9692. Call in now.